Cause like a winter tonight, I thought I would always have light. The quick flash that you gave to me, so dark I could barely see. Looking
from wherever you are around the world, welcome and thank you for joining us. This is the Circle of Insight show, a show about everything in human behavior. I'm Dr. Carlos. Today we're going to be talking with Buddy McGirt, former junior welterweight and welterweight champion of the world and trainer to 10 world champions. Let's welcome Buddy McGirt to the circle. Welcome, Buddy.
How you doing, Sal? Everything?
That's great. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, Buddy, before we get into the nitty-gritty of boxing, I wanted to learn a little bit about you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in New York, Long Island, New York. I grew up in Long Island, to be exact.
Now, were you near Mike Tyson's area, or is that too far away from Mike Tyson?
Tyson's from Brooklyn. I'm about 30 minutes from Brooklyn.
Well, 30 minutes away from it?
30 minutes from Brooklyn.
And how many brothers and sisters did you have?
It was 5 boys, 1 girl, 6 of us.
5? Oh, wow, 5 boys. Did you practice boxing with them at all?
Well, you know, I got into boxing when I was 12. I had a cousin who boxed professionally. And every time we would go to my uncle's house, my uncle was always bragging about my cousin, and he had a bunch of trophies. And I wanted my mother to brag about me, so I'm going to get me some trophies.
Then you got into boxing, huh? That's a good reason. Now, when did you first win your title? How old were you?
I was 24 when I won my first world title.
Wow.
And the best thing about that was that I was the first world champion ever from Long Island, New York.
Oh, really?
Yes, they had said Jerry Cooney was going to be the first one. Then they said Howard Davis, and it was Buddy McGirt.
That's awesome. Did you get your own statue?
No, I didn't get no statue.
Ah,
but you know what? There's an airport in Long Island, MacArthur Airport.
Oh, there you go.
There's a picture of me in the airport.
Oh, excellent. There you go.
That's better than the statue.
That is better than the statue. So let me start doing this. How long were you champion for?
The first time I was champ, I lost my title within like 9 or 10 months. And then I won my second world title in 1991. I was champ for 2 years.
Now, was it different? Because I know we've asked questions to other boxers in the past, you know, how does it feel going down the ring? How does it feel about being in the ring? But I've never asked anybody yet, is there a difference between Buddy McGirt, the guy trying to get the championship belt, compared to the Buddy McGirt that already has the belt?
You mean trying to get it as a trainer?
No, as a boxer, when you're chasing that title, is it different as when you're chasing it, you're hungry, compared to when you already have the title and now you're a champion?
It's harder to keep it. You got to work harder to keep it.
Do you get mentally lazier?
You know, the first time I won't admit that. I mean, not too many guys will admit that. But, you know, the first time I won the championship, and then my first title defense was a first-round knockout over Howard Davis, I felt I owned the world. So I was working hard, but literally, you know, everything was moving fast for me when I won my first title. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when I won it the second time, I was more smarter, and I stayed more focused. That's why I was able to keep it for 2 years.
Interesting. Yeah, it always reminds me of that Rocky, I think it was Rocky IV, where he had won the title and he was kind of getting a little bit almost bored, it seemed like, and then Clubber Lang came in and knocked it right out of him.
You watch so many movies. That's Hollywood. Anything can happen in Hollywood.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about that.
When I won my first world title, everything was being thrown at me. You know, all these big fights. You know, instead of sitting back and enjoying it, I was young. I was only 24, and I thought it would never end. And then less than a year later, it was over. And then reality set in and made me understand that the next time I get a shot at it, I got to be more careful. And God bless me. You know, 3 years later, I got another shot and I won it. And I was more smart the second time around.
That's interesting. So actually, that loss was a big help for you to stay focused and more in tune with what's going on in your championship and how you focus on life.
I mean, So you know, I mean, you live and learn. But you know, if I had to change it all, if I was doing it over again, I wouldn't change anything. If you want to know the truth.
Really?
And I say that it might sound crazy, but it helped me become the man that I am today, and the trainer that I am today.
Let's go into your training a little bit. Now, I know you've, like you said, we said earlier in the show, you have 10 world champions under your belt as a trainer. What are some of the differences between you as a boxer and you as a trainer?
Let me tell you, man, it's, you know, when I started as a trainer, it was, you know, it was tough. And, you know, I was going through champions, and say, like, between 1997 and, like I said, 2009, after that, you know, the guys that came along, the breed of fighters was so different, man. It was like night and day.
Oh, really?
So the earlier guys that trained, I was champions, they were hungry. You know, I mean, they were, even when they were champions, they went at the gym one time. It wasn't picking who they sparred. They just came to work. Even when they were champions, they wanted to work. These guys today, man, they want you to hold their hand. They want you to baby them, man. And it's like, are you serious? It's not the same anymore. That fire is not there. You know, there's something lacking, man. And a lot of it is, a lot of these fighters, they really don't have that much respect for their trainers. They act like they do. You know what I mean? But I've seen a lot of trainers, and let me rephrase that, I've seen a lot of guys who betray trainers, kiss butt. Now, there are some trainers out there, I will say, that stand their ground. I mean, but there's very few that stand their ground with these fighters today. You know, a lot of these fighters today, they tell the trainers what they're going to do, what they're not going to do. I mean,
so there's a.
There was a time when you walked in the gym, you never asked the trainer what you was doing. You never told your trainer what you was doing. You just did it.
And now they tell you what they're going to do?
Oh, no, not me. No. I'm not the one.
Well, they tell the other trainers.
One guy I'll never forget again. When that fighter walked in the gym and said, "Boy, what am I doing today?" And my son said, "No, whatever you do, don't ever ask my father that."
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he said, "Don't ask my father that, man, because, you know, you always got to keep that respect level there." But these guys today, some of these guys today, man, I'm telling you.
Now, do you think it's a generational thing, or do you think it's because the sport has changed and the money and the glamour is bigger than it was?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know what I mean? I think that, and there's something in the water. You know what I mean?
Something in the water.
I mean, like, today you get a fighter come up to you and say, "Well, buddy, I need help. I'm saying, man, I can get you. Oh, buddy, what? Am I going to get a bonus? Bonus. You got to earn that bonus, baby. You got to earn that bonus. You want to sign the bonus, you got to earn it." These guys don't know what it takes to earn what they get today.
And you've had, well, you said, like we said earlier, we had 10 world champions. Have you seen does the fame get to them at all when they're champions? Have you seen some of them go down because of that?
You know what? I can honestly say that I was blessed with a good crew of guys. You know, I'm blessed with a good crew of fighters, man. You know, that they understood and respected the game. I mean, they understood and respected. I mean, every now and then you get a guy who, you know, he's got a little smart remarks or, you know, say something stupid, but you know, a lot of these guys they love and respect the game, and I think that comes from the generation that they came from. You know, as amateurs, they were around old school trainers and old school gyms who really tried to implement a lot about the game into them.
Interesting.
So I was blessed in that aspect of the group of guys that I've had and worked with. You know, they loved and respected the game and understood it. A lot of these guys today, they really don't understand it.
Let me ask you.
The people around them make them think they understand it, but these guys really don't understand the game, man. They got no clue. They have great opportunities, and you know they're making a whole lot of money. But and I'm not mad at them. I'm happy for them. But the fighters today, they're just so different. There's no really guys that get down to the nitty gritty today.
Let me ask, we're going to go into a little bit of the psychology of boxing, if you don't mind. I've been talking to a couple of the UFC fighters, and one of the interesting comments I've heard was the majority of the fight is actually psychological.
Oh,
Does that apply to boxing too, do you think?
If the boxing is called the sweet science. There's only one sweet science.
And so you think the psychology is pretty important for the boxer, maybe whether it's intimidation or strategy?
A lot of it's mental. You know, you got to have a strategy. You know, there's a lot that plays into it. You know what I mean? Any fight, any game, anything is psychologically. I mean, you could be physically fit, but mentally, if your mind ain't there, no matter what you're doing in this world, I mean, if your mind isn't there, you're not gonna do this. So your mind has to be into whatever you're doing, whether it's you're driving a race car or you're playing basketball. The fighter, the athlete who has their mind focused on the point at hand, is gonna have a better chance.
That's a good point. I like that. One of the things that reminds me, too, the relationship that Mike Tyson had with Cus D'Amato, was that a very unique situation, or do you think that was more typical back then?
That was very, it was a little bit of both. I'm going to tell you why. Back then, the trainers demanded respect. They demanded respect. But I said this to Mike Tyson one day. I said, no, Cus D'Amato's had a lot of world champions. I said, but what he did with you, he could not have done with anybody else.
Really?
I mean, think about it. I mean, you got to give credit where credit is due. What he did with Mike Tyson, nobody else can do that.
That's
with McDonald, couldn't do that with Mike Tyson. Let me rephrase that. They couldn't do it with Mike Tyson.
Yeah, it was an amazing relationship they had.
Exactly, and the things he was able to get Mike Tyson to do, he couldn't. He's had other fighters before Mike, and I think he got more out of Mike Tyson than he's got out of any other fighter before Mike Tyson. That's my belief, because I'm a good listener, and I watch how Cus was with Mike, and the things Kevin Rooney was able to get Mike Tyson to do, nobody else was able to do after Kevin Rooney.
That's true. That's the other thing about it.
I mean, think about it. When you think about it, no one was able to get Mike Tyson to do those things. And everything Kevin Rooney taught him and implemented him came from Cus D'Amato. My cousin had Floyd Patterson, and he had a bunch of other champions. But there was only one champion that was able to do the things that he really, really wanted him to execute, and that was Mike Tyson.
So what does Buddy McGirt think is the secret formula, if there is one, for a boxer to become champion of the world?
Hey, man, it's hard work, dedication, and most importantly, it's all about timing. It's all about timing. We all know in anything, you could be the greatest athlete, but if the timing is wrong, you know what I mean? I mean, you get some guys come a little bit before, you get some guys come a little bit after. But boxing is all about timing. I mean, you got to keep your eye on the prize, no matter what. You got to keep your eye on the prize. It's a tough task. People don't realize how tough it is to get to that point. I mean, today, you got two or three fights. I mean, you get guys fighting for the world title, 7 pro fights. To me, that's a disgrace to boxing.
How many fights? Seven fights?
I mean, look at the guy Lomachenko, is that his name? Come on, that's disrespectful. How many guys were up there before him? Didn't get a title fight. Here's a guy coming in 3-4 fights, fight for the title. That's a joke.
That's a good point. Never thought about that.
It's a joke, man. I mean, come on. You got guys that have been plugging along for years and never got that title fight. Here's a guy coming along out of amateurs, 3-4 fights and fighting for the title. To me, that's a disrespect to the sport.
That's a good point. Didn't think about that. That's a really good point. And that's because of the money involved?
Well, that's what it means. It's not like he's a world beater. Even Floyd and Pacquiao had to earn their stripes.
Well, we're going to ask you your opinion on the Pacquiao Mayweather fight at the end of the interview.
had to earn their stripes, man. This guy comes along. Come on, man. Then he gets a title fight, and Wallace braving about him. And then he gets his ass kicked. Then what? Have you heard anything about him since?
Yeah, no. Does that crush the guys who didn't get that title fight? Does it really kill their self-esteem?
I don't know if it kills their self-esteem, but to me, you have a guy, say a guy's ready number 3 in the world, say for 2 years, 3 years, busting his up, can't get a fight, you know what I mean? Here's a kid coming on 3-4 fights, fights nobody, and he gets a world title fight. Another guy comes to me, maybe 8-9 years of hard work and dedication to the game, and he's still waiting to get a listen. I lost my world title in 1988, September of 1988. I didn't get another title fight till November of 1991.
Oh, wow, 3 years.
this guy comes out of the amateur, turns pro, 3 or 4 or 5 minutes getting a world title fight. That's disrespecting the sport, man.
That's a good point. Let me ask you this question. We talked to Larry Holmes the other day, and I asked him the question. What's going on in the heavyweight division?
Heavyweights today, there's a lot of talent out there. But the problem is a lot of them are so damn spoiled that the managers spoil them to the point where there's no need for them to really bust their hump. They get a salary every month. They get their bills paid. They got a fancy car, and they get money in their pocket. Where's the fire? Where's the hunger?
Interesting.
There is no hunger. You know what I'm saying? There's no fire there.
That's a good point. That's exactly what Larry said, that they don't even know how to box yet.
Yeah, I mean, so there's guys that they were talent, but they're lazy. They when the end of the month comes, when the fence is about to roll around, they're in the gym every day working hard. Why? Because the manager's got to drop a check off. Manager sees the fighter in the gym. All right, my fighter's working good. So it's like by the second or the third, the guy's back at McDonald's eating again.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's going to be really hard to get motivated if you already have everything you need.
Exactly. I mean, where's the fire? There's no fire there. Yeah. You got to keep them hungry, man.
We got a few minutes left. I want to ask you a couple questions. We're going to do the... you're the expert in boxing. You've won titles yourself. You've had professional boxers win titles under you as a trainer. So we got a couple scenarios, and I want to see what Buddy McGirt's opinion is. Do you think Mike Tyson at his prime could beat Klitschko at his prime?
If Mike Tyson was with Kevin Rooney, yes.
He could beat him?
With Kevin Rooney, yes.
Interesting.
Can't be with anybody else. Got to be with Kevin Rooney.
Gotta do it, Kevin Rooney. Is he coaching still?
Huh?
Is Kevin Rooney coaching still?
I don't know, but I just know that, there's always, it's like a married couple. There's always that one that can bring up the best in you.
I guess, yeah.
Kevin Rooney, there's certain coaches, they get certain things out of a certain player that no other coach can do, no matter how good the coach is.
And that's Kevin Rooney.
Kevin Rooney could get stuff out of Mike Tyson that nobody else can but Customato.
Interesting. All right, we have to ask the big question. Are you ready, buddy?
I'm ready.
Who do you think, Mayweather, Pacquiao?
You know, I got to say 50-50.
50-50?
I call a fight a draw.
Wow, I haven't heard that one yet.
it's hard because
do you think it'll go the distance?
If it goes the distance, it's going to be a draw without a doubt.
Interesting.
If it goes the distance, it will be a draw for the rematch. Because that's the only way there's going to be a rematch. There's two ways it'll be a rematch. If Floyd loses, or if the fight's a draw. If Floyd wins, there ain't going to be no rematch. So if the fight is close, and the fight goes the distance, it will be a draw. Remember I said it this day on your radio show. If the fight is close, and it goes the distance, it will be a draw.
All right, you heard it from Buddy McGirt. It's a draw if it goes the distance. Here's our last question. Are you ready, buddy?
I'm ready.
What happens? We're going to say one night you go to bed, you wake up the next morning, a magical spell came over Buddy McGirt. He became back in his prime. This is in your prime boxing days. Which champion would you want to take on if you could pick anybody from any era?
Anybody from any era?
Yeah. At your prime, who would you want to take on? Would it be, I don't know who it would be.
Who would I want to fight in my prime?
Marvin Hagler, De La Hoya. I don't know.
No, I don't knock De La Hoya out.
You would knock him out, he said?
I don't even need magical stuff for that one.
Oh.
No, I'm just joking. You know what? That's a tough question.
Is there any? Actually, you know what? Did you ever have a mentor before you got into the boxing world?
You know what? You know what? The mentor that I had, I was listening. I would never have fought Sugar Ray Robinson, Sugar Ray Manny. I wouldn't want to fight no those guys for killers, man.
Oh, really? You know, how about Mugabe?
On the beef. Well, they were too big. Mugabe was too big.
Oh, that's
Mugabe
right.
Mugabe was a little big. I was welterweight.
That's right. He was a little too big.
So, I mean, I would,
I'll tell you what I would fight any champion in this era, 140 to 160.
Anybody in this era right now? Anybody that I'd have fought them all the same night. In the 70s and 80s, you had great champions. The 50s and 60s. I mean, I'm a realist. You know what I mean? You had guys like Sugar Ray Robinson, Sugar Ray Leonard, Carlos Basilio, Gene Foreman, Marvin Hagler, Tommy Hearns, Aaron Pryor, you know what I'm saying, Roberto Duran. Hell no, I don't want to fight them.
That's right. That's true. Yeah, heck of a class there. You mentioned already Muhammad Ali, George Foreman.
I would love to have fought them. No, I wouldn't want to fuck them. And Roberto Duran was a beast, man.
But no mas.
Huh?
He said no mas.
Okay, but he came back and won two of my titles.
That's true. There you go.
He beat David Moore, he beat Iran Barkley. Anyone took 2 hours of my Hagler.
Oh, Hagler was a tough one, too.
I'm 12-15.
Oh, buddy, well, thank you so much for this. I'm sorry?
That's greatness right there. Those were great fighters.
Those were great fighters. You were a great fighter.
I'm going to say this before we get off the air.
Well, I'm sorry?
I'm going to say one thing before we get off the air.
Of course, go right ahead.
When Sugar Ray Leonard moved up to fight Marvin Hagler at 160 pounds, What was the weight limit?
What was the weight limit?
Yeah, 160, correct?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Why is it today when these champions move up and they fight the champion for their belt, the champions have to come in 2 pounds lighter? Under the weight limit.
Oh, they do.
Under the weight limit now. But Sergio Martinez had to fight Conor for the middleweight title. Sergio Martinez had to come in 158 pounds.
Why is that?
Thank you.
Huh.
When Floyd fought Canelo, Canelo has to come in 152 pounds. If you're a real super champion, if you're a great champion, you fight that fighter at the natural weight that you're fighting for. That's what makes a world champion.
That is a strange rule indeed. I haven't heard. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, they fight him at catch weights.
Nah, that's ridiculous.
How are you going to fight a champion for a catchweight? He's the champ. You going to make him come 2 pounds under his weight limit so you can fight for his title. You beat him, and now you're a middleweight champion of the world. Get the hell out of here.
I agree with you. Once again, very unfair. Thank you so much for coming to the circle, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
This was a wonderful interview, a wonderful... how would you say, walk down memory lane, talking about former boxers, talking about current boxers, Buddy McGirt, a world-class champion, a world-class trainer, and a world-class guy. Well, remember, our motto is simple, everyone. Wherever there's psychology involved, even in the boxing ring, we're going to be there. We'll talk to you next time. This was a Therapy Cable production.